Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, Baltimore Positive. We are just getting through this sort of post-St. Patrick's Day hangover, but really what's going on this week? Luke Jones and I are heading down to Sarasota. We're going to be in Florida for the week working, like working media. He's working media. I'm sort of like Lou in Back to School. I'm sort of the driver with the cap in Florida, but we're going to have a good time. We're going to be down at Sarasota later on in the week. So if you're watching Red Sox games or Pirates games or things on Masson, or they give you a Twinkies game, yeah, if it's a guy in an orange jersey that has really spectacular hair, it might be me. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour comes back at you beginning in April. We're going to be at Fadley's on Fridays live, really live, from 2 until 5. Don't kick the wires. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Window Nation, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions and Jiffy Lube MultiCare. We're taking it on the road here this week. But baseball, we're going to get to baseball in a little bit. Opening day rosters, which are fluxing and flexing, and we're going to play baseball here. I hope it's one of the 71-degree days and not one of the 43-degree days next week. Luke Jones joins us now. We're going to talk some football, though. Man, so much has gone on, right? Like, I really felt like I thought about this all weekend before having you on, because you and I have not done the deep dive other than, hey, they're bringing Derrick Henry in. You know, Eric DaCosta must be listening to Nestor's show the last 18 months. And I'm not going to spike the ball on that because I don't know if it's a good idea or not. We now have like a totality, right? We have free agents in, tampering's over. We breathe some fresh air. Morgan Moses, just a whole lot of change. I mean, right on down to who the backup quarterback is, right? I mean, Snoop's even gone out the side door and stayed in the division. They, you know, I'm going to say any tectonic plates have shifted the last week, maybe in Pittsburgh, where they have not one quarterback, but two, and neither one of them are named Kenny Pickett. Been a hell of a week, huh? It's been a month and a week, hasn't it, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, it always is. And I think this time of year, typically for the Ravens and specifically for Ravens fans, it can be unnerving. It can be unsettling. We know that this is a team historically that is not terribly active in free agency, at least in terms of spending big bucks. And we knew that they didn't have a whole lot of cap space. So they've taken some measures to create some cap space without even going the route of renegotiating and restructuring a ton of contracts. But you trade Morgan Moses, you release Tyus Bowser, you give Ronnie Stanley a pretty substantial pay cut and even redo his deal to the point where next year was torn up. He's going to be a free agent after this year, and you've reduced his cap number pretty substantially. And
boy, they're good at all this, aren't they? I mean, at that point, I mean, like, they really – they eat their Wheaties. I mean, in a way, we compare them to the Orioles over years and years and years about wasted money and this and where they are, getting the best deal with Lamar, even though it was ugly. And they you can't win a championship in March, but they never win headlines in March. But when they can compete for a championship, it's because of these decisions, right? I mean, it's really the way they run their business in that way that's so sound.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, this is what you do this time of year. I mean, the Saints for years have redone deals and redone deals and redone deals, and you get under the cap. So I mean, some teams are better at it than others from the standpoint of not trying to have too many peaks and valleys in terms of how your cap goes. I mean, the Ravens have tried to maintain a little bit of a flatter situation, meaning that it's a little more consistent year to year. But you know, I mean, Ronnie Stanley had a $26 million cap figure for 2024. That was not in line with his production and his availability and his health at this point in his career. And by the way, he also knew that he wasn't going to get that kind of money out on the open market if the Ravens said goodbye to him. So you get to a point where you try to come to a number that you feel is fair. The player's not going to feel is fair, but he also realizes that the kind of deal that the Ravens gave him 4 years ago is not out there on the market for him at this stage of his career. So, you know,
well, it's also making that right now, isn't it? I mean, you know, part of this is I just gave them all the credit. Make sure that, you know, when it hits the social media that I gave Eric credit, but there's also blame of like, they missed on Ronnie Stanley from a financial standpoint of what they've given him,
Oh.
but that's an injury and that's around the corner. And when they gave it to him, they thought he would be maybe not John Ogden, but maybe Marshall Yanda.
Yeah.
Just they just thought he was going to be a really, really solid part, and that they wouldn't be starting games with guys with arms that are foot shorter, quite frankly, and
Yeah.
McCary.
Right. I mean, let's face it, go back in time, and we've talked about this over and over. I mean, he signed that near $100 million deal literally 2 days before he wrecked his ankle. So look, Eric DaCosta, you can say a lot of things about how smart he is or certain things maybe that didn't work out quite as well, but he's not a fortune teller to say, oh yeah, we're going to sign this deal and Ronnie's going to ruin his ankle in a couple of days. I mean, unfortunately, it's football. It happens from time to time. And when they signed him in 2020, he was coming off of a 2019 season that was Jonathan Ogden-like, let's say, at least for one season. He was in that realm, at least, where you were talking about him as one of the very best left tackles in football. So, but that was just one of many moves that we saw over the course of the first week of free agency. And the roster is still far from complete. I think that much is evident when you look at the number of, and it's funny because I've seen some fans, I've seen some media types, even national media types talk about the amount of attrition the Ravens endured. And look, they lost a number of players. At the same time, beyond Patrick Queen, beyond, someone like Geno Stone, who wasn't a starter, but played starter snaps, considering how many three safety looks they deployed this past year. But for the most part, you're talking about depth pieces. You're talking about guys, and look, that's valuable. Let's be clear. And you have to find that via the draft. You have to find that with internal options. You have to find that with you're hoping will be some veteran signings that they were able to find last year in August, in July, the way that they did and the way so many of them worked out. But this is a roster at this point that does look different. And I think really the offensive line's the big spot that I look at right now. I mean, sure, we can talk about edge rusher, we can talk about needing another corner, we can go down the list, wide receiver, with Odell Beckham even bidding farewell to the Ravens via social media over the weekend, which was not unexpected, but kind of felt like some finality to it. But it's the offensive line for me right now. I mean, they traded Morgan Moses to the New York Jets. As I said to you, it kind of sort of felt like it played out that the Ravens kind of looked at Ronnie Stanley, they looked at Morgan Moses, and they kind of said, all right, we're not going to get rid of both of you because that'd be a step too far in terms of your offensive line, but we're moving on from one of you. And when Ronnie Stanley agreed to take the pay cut, Morgan Moses is the one they said goodbye to. And I'm guessing if Stanley, as is typically the case when you're talking about a pay cut situation, if a player balks, you better be willing to cut that guy then, because if you ask a guy to take a pay cut and he says no, and then you keep him, guess what's going to happen to every other player in the future that you ask to take a pay cut? They're going to say no because they're going to know that you're not going to cut them. So, but they move on from Morgan Moses, and now we're talking about three spots on the offensive line that they have to replace at this point. And look, are there some incumbent candidates that I think are viable contenders to be starters on the 2024 offensive line? Sure. Are any of them really proven? Not really. So they've got work to do on that front. And fortunately for them, it is a pretty deep draft class, at least perception-wise, in terms of the O-line. So 30th overall, I'm guessing there's a pretty strong bet you can make that they're going to take an offensive lineman there if the right guy's available. But, in the meantime, they did re-sign Justin Madubuike. They brought in Derrick Henry. So they've at least solidified the running back position that was very much wide open, given the Keaton Mitchell's health and Gus Edwards' departure last week. So they've solved that, so to speak, but they still have quite a few positions they're going to have to address. But as Eric DaCosta said at the Derrick Henry press conference, as Ozzie Newsome said year after year after year, they're not playing football in March. They're not playing football in April. And that's a good thing because they still have a lot of work to do on their roster. But remember, their starting point where they're coming from, coming off of a 13-4 season, having a franchise quarterback, when you're looking at all the musical chairs changing around the NFL with quarterbacks, you have stability there. So, they're still, you look at this division, yeah, it's changed. And Pittsburgh's more interesting now than they were, but they're still not great at quarterback. They're still not proven at quarterback in the way that the Ravens are, in the way that a healthy Joe Burrow makes the Bengals. But it certainly changed the landscape a little bit. But the Ravens are still, they're still in good shape. They have a lot of work to do between now and September, but they're still in a position where they're going to be one of the favorites of this division, and they're still very much in the mix in the AFC. But like I said, still have quite a few boxes to check as we now are beyond those first few waves of free agency.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs and, of course, doing Orioles baseball. We are going to be in Sarasota together this weekend. So if you follow us out on the socials, and the survey says there's 100,000 of you that follow us out on the socials in one place or another, from YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Threads or X or wherever you are. We will be there doing our thing and probably coming back with some stuff for you on the radio, some stuff at Baltimore Positive, certainly some stuff on social media, some observations. I'm going to be writing some writings. There is a 25th anniversary documentary in the works that I've been really hard at work on the last week or so. You're going to be hearing here on the air some greatest hits, probably our last foray with the Angelos family and telling that story. We published the book up. We have new owners. Ownership coming in. I'm looking forward to that. So lots and lots of things, including just a really interesting Ravens offseason. So I look at this as a really deep dive now, because not a ton's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 weeks, other than this stock's going to go up and this mock draft's going to come out and this pro day and all of that stuff, because you're going to have your head into baseball. People are filling out March Madness brackets, and we don't even have a dog in the hunt around here. And that's just been really weird. The college basketball just sort of evaporated during this period of time. I know you got WrestleMania up, and we're going to do a whole segment on that, because I found all my old wrestling pictures. I found my parents' pictures from the streets of St. Louis. So deep diving here, Luke, with the offensive line. And let's start with this. If I knew Eric DaCosta anymore, and I only knew him for 30 years, and we were having our traditional coffee, and Harbaugh was having me in for the traditional 6:30 in the morning breakfast that I get thrown out around 9 in the morning, and I ask these guys what's up, and they put their feet up on the cocktail table, they would tell me how they feel about certain offensive linemen, like Jermaine Illuminor, who's making some money in some other places, but was not John Harbaugh's guy, right? You've mentioned Ben Cleveland. And I just want to say this for the record, because this is me being flippant after sitting up all night putting 25th anniversaries together with all of these people from the inside of the inside of the inside. I just would say this for anybody that pays attention to this. These are really, really astute, up all night, working hard on this. They have opinions, they have tape, they have data, they have sports science, they have trainers, they have, I like this guy. This guy's got an off the field issue. This guy has doesn't want to be here. This guy's got a whatever. All of this stuff they know after having a guy in the building for 2 or 3 or 4 years. And this is what I will always say this time of the year. You can guess, and you can play internet expert, and you can go out and read the websites and all of these rags that I see out on X and insider this and insider that. They always tell you how they're really feeling when they make their decisions. When they give you the tea leaves. They like Ronnie Stanley. They think he's got more football left in him than maybe you and I do. Morgan Moses. They really feel like they needed some draft picks, right? Like they really need some draft picks, and they need to figure this offensive line out for the next couple of years. But I have a feeling that if they're dealing off Moses, if they're letting Zeitler go out the side door, that they, one, think they're really smart about replacing them and they'll find another Ricky Wagner, another Ryan Jensen, or that they have that guy because they were always stockpiling these offensive linemen and they get them to class about year 3, year 4 in the old system just in time to go off to Tampa and get $55 million and win a couple of Super Bowls, right? So, or one Super Bowl. They didn't win two, right? But nonetheless, I throw it to you at this point. What do they really feel about the offensive line? Because to me, that's the deep dive. They showed how they felt about Derrick Henry. You and I went 4 weeks on 6 weeks on who's going to be the running back. They They sided with me on that one. They thought, ah, we're going to spend $8 million. We're going to get a fat back in here. We're going to get a, we're going to get a dude. We need a dude to go with Lamar, not a draft pick, not a second round, another Ray Rice scat back. We need a dude. They made that decision. You wouldn't have made that decision, right? But we talk about it. Ronnie Stanley, I don't know. Maybe they're just desperate, and it's sort of like they couldn't – could they not cut him money-wise? I'm thinking about that and thinking like, you know, do you want to play with Morgan Moses and have this cap hit on Ron, and then go into camp without a left tackle? But they like Ronnie Stanley. I mean, they've told us things, I guess, to this. The tea leaves are they've shown us they wanted a back. They want – Ronnie Stanley at a price, right? That they could, and they fixed all that, but they must love a couple of these offensive linemen they already have, because I don't think they'd go naked into the wilderness like this.
Well, we're going to see. We're going to find out. I mean, it's, I think Ben Cleveland replacing Kevin Zeitler. And by the way, I mean, considering how pretty lucrative the start of the market was, you know, start of free agency was for guards, I think with Kevin Zeitler, one, he's going to be 34 years old. I think there's some concern about that knee injury he had late in the year. I do wonder how much of that scared off the Ravens. I wonder if that scared off some other teams, because you look at some of the other guards out there, less accomplished. And I get it. He's not a spring chicken, but for him to be unsigned going into the second week of free agency, I think perhaps
he
more
might
to
also
that.
Be looking for a 3-year deal for a real ski, and think he's going to play three. He might be thinking, I'm going to play 3 more years and I'm going to get paid three, you know, like,
sure.
Instead of a team thinking, dude, you might not make it to Thanksgiving.
Well, and that's the thing. But at the same time, we also know how teams throw around. And I said throw away. That was a Freudian slip, but teams throw away money on free agents. I mean, they do. History,
but they'd
shows
rather
us.
Them be 26 than 34 when they
sure.
throw it. But to your point, and we've been through the Villanuevas and the Garrods. I mean, I'm thinking of the Willie Andrews. I mean, you know, they've been through that channel of even Bryant McKinney, right? But also Matt Burke. But, you know, on the other side, they've had some – and Morgan Moses, who've been very – and Zeitler, very serviceable guys that they've brought in. They're good at this too. I mean, to me – Kukinis, they've identified somebody that's going to get cut somewhere. Like, they're just really good about this. And we sit here naked on March 18th and say, whoa, what are they going to do? You know, if you're reading the time, oh, they don't have any linemen. They have something up their sleeve. They always do.
Well, we'll see. I mean, but there are also years where they think they do, and then they have a major problem. I mean, back in 2021, they thought Alejandro Villanueva was going to be a good insurance policy for Ronnie Stanley, and he wasn't. You know, he was bad. Their offensive line was bad that year. The year that Marshall Yanda retired, you know, they kind of thought that they could figure out right guard, and they really didn't. And that's why a year later they went and signed Kevin Zeitler, but they struggled at that position. So you never know. But I think the prevailing theme, first of all, a couple of things, and to address what you said about Ronnie Stanley, it was prohibitive to cut him. I mean, it just was. You're going to have to, the only way that it made any sense whatsoever from a salary cap standpoint was going to be a post June 1st. And then what does that mean? You don't get that cap space until June. So you're all that cap space that you're going to get, you're sitting out, you know, the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth wave of free agency. Through that lens, you still need a left tackle, because I don't think Patrick McCary is that guy. And when you're picking 30th overall, it's one thing to say, all right, well, we'll get our next Ben Grubbs, or we'll get our next Morgan Moses, or let's say Orlando Brown, who I know wasn't a late first round pick, but he's a third round pick and ended up playing as the year went on. Point is, picking 30th overall, you're not finding a week one rookie starting left tackle. You might find a guy that's going to grow into that role. You might find a guy that can do that in year two, or maybe he can even do it by week 10. But you're not finding a guy picking 30th overall that you're going to feel any level of confidence and comfort as a contender that's going to start at left tackle week one. So that's where I think you look at this and say, all right, what can we do from a cap standpoint? What can we do from a compensation standpoint to save some cap space, offer Ronnie Stanley some incentives that if he plays and he plays well and he stays on the field, he can make himself much more whole financially for where he was going to be, where he was supposed to be in 2024. And, oh, yeah, if he has that really good year, then will tear up the last year of his deal, and he can hit the market. And he'll be 31, which isn't young, but it's not Kevin Zeitler old either. So it gives him some opportunity to have a really good year, get himself in good shape, put the knee injury that he dealt with all last year behind him, and try to come out and be not the 2019 version of Ronnie Stanley. I think that ship sailed 5 years later, but to be a better version of what we saw in 2023. And I think that's the calculated bet that the Ravens are taking. And again, we so often try to view these things through the lens of yes or no, pass or fail. There's more nuance to it. Ronnie Stanley was a major value concern, paying him, what was it, $15 million between his base salary and the roster bonus he was going to get. His overall cap number was like $26 million. He was a major value concern. But now when you look at the rework deal, that brings his cap number down to, I think it's in the neighborhood of, I want to say it's like 17, something like that. It's still on the high side, but it's much more tenable. It's much, you can deal with that. So
Man, the money's
that's,
unbelievable, dude. He's made $101 million as a Raven
yeah.
so far.
Well, and
Man,
again, you go.
I don't go to the math often, and you don't see it in newspapers so much where you have to go look for it because it doesn't sit there. You have to go to Over the Cap or Sport Track, one of these places. But like it's no wonder these guys don't talk to any of us. I'm just like sort of like it's really. Because I sit here and talk to John Martin about $100 million and and hitting the lottery and what winning $700 million this week would be in Powerball or Mega Million. It's unbelievable. It really is. It's just other. I just have to take a moment and powder off after looking up the salaries and just thinking like when you're like give him a chance to go out and make a little bit more money. And I'm like, okay, man, like they cut his money and he was gonna get take the market, but the lifestyle change of all of that and going someplace where it's not a contender, this is good business for everybody to stay in the boat. If he can still play, if he can go out and play 18 games and be a left tackle for a Super Bowl champion, I question that.
Well, at the same time, look how close they got to making the Super Bowl with him as their left tackle this past year at less than 100% and missing some time. So, I mean, we're going to see. I think it's obviously a huge offseason for him. I think it behooves the Ravens that he comes out and plays well because they are going to have so many question marks. But I want to get back to overall vision for the offensive line, and I think where they're going under Todd Monken, and I think this even played into where they are with Derrick Henry. And I made the point to you last week that I think there's a for people who only look at Derrick Henry and see how big he is and see what the numbers look like and seeing the highlights, Derrick Henry is the kind of back that when he's at his best, it's getting to the edge, actually. And that's not to say he can't run between the tackles. It's not to say he doesn't run people over. I'm not saying any of that, but I think there's this perception of him that he's this between the tackle mauler. And when really, when you see him at his best, and we even saw him do this against the Ravens in London back in October, he gets to the edge. And I think one thing
And
that
he's
you're
got five
seeing.
steps of momentum going, and you've got two steps moving backwards sometimes, and that's trouble.
Sure. But part of that is also with an offensive line that does more zone blocking. And I think they're looking to get more athletic there. And I think that's why you're seeing, not a lot of interest that they had in keeping Kevin Zeitler at 34, even though he's coming off of a season where he was their second best offensive lineman behind Tyler Linderbaum at center. But I think with that move, with the move to move on from Morgan Moses, who, I see a lot of people give grief and treat the, act like he was so bad this past year. Well, Pro Football Focus gave him a good grade, and ESPN's pass block win rate, he had a pretty good grade. So must have been doing something right. And I think part of this is also, I think we have higher expectations around the league for offensive line play than what you actually see practically speaking. And I think a lot of that goes into the college game, pro style offenses or lack thereof. In college, and linemen not getting in a 3-point stance as frequently as they did in the past in the collegiate game. So there's lots of issues and tentacles to that whole debate. But
How much of that goes to Monken being here for a year back in the league, watching the league every, I mean, he's a genius, right? I mean, literally, right? I mean, like hey, we need to do this a little differently. Maybe if we were constructed a little differently, we could do things a little differently. I can't do that with a 34-year-old guard. I can't do the things I want to do in a gimpy left tackle that's we can't cut. You know, he's our guy, and you know, he's mediocre. He's middle of the pack at this point. We need to play to his strengths. Like, I would think this is, and again, this is when I used to talk to Harbaugh and DaCosta, and I had that. This is an organizational move around Lamar to me, around Lamar, and we can't have him getting hit. We have to have the let's pay a running back to get to take some hits and a really good one. And but figuring out the offensive line, I think last year's last year. I don't think they're going to go back. I think they want to change what they're doing to some degree. Revolution, right? Evolution of the revolution. How about that? That's pretty good. Almost like the banana splits.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, is it going to be drastic? I mean, they're gonna have three new starters, so it's gonna be drastic at least from a personnel standpoint. But like I said, I think they want to become more athletic. You know, they've really been a team that's taken pride in having big offensive linemen and physical. And you know, you think about what they tried to do running a lot of heavy personnel under Greg Roman. I think they're trying to transition on that front. Now, exactly what that's going to look like, well, we're going to have to see who they bring in. I mean, I think Ben Cleveland's going to play right guard. But what's kind of interesting about this is he doesn't fit that mold of what I just really described. I mean, he's a big, massive physical right guard. He's not necessarily a guy that you think about that's going to be really good in space and pulling and things like that, in the way that Tyler Linderbaum can move, and you think about him blocking at the second level and downfield, and some of the big blocks he threw last year to spring Keaton Mitchell on some of those long runs that we saw from the speedy rookie.
It's
So
also what he's capable of too, right? In the middle, that he's special,
yeah, I
but you
mean,
have to do
Linderbaum's
special
the
things
anchor
with him,
now. Yeah, I
right?
mean, it's very evident. I mean, Linderbaum's the anchor, the best, you know, he's their best lineman at this point, and they're building around him. I mean, Ronnie Stanley's here for one more year because it wasn't, you know, you didn't want to have four new offensive linemen, and it wasn't practical to cut him, and you know, to be in a position where you could bring in a left tackle on top of what you're already going to have to do. You know, I think you're trying to draft your left tackle of the future to maybe play guard for a year, to maybe play right tackle for a year. But you know,
You know, if I still
Ben.
talk to Eric DaCosta, who's such a baseball fan, you know, Red Sox fan, this is straight up the middle, right? Henry, Lamar, Linderbaum on the other side, money in the middle. You know, they just spent the money last week, and then Roquan, they spent all that money, and they're going to have to spend money on Kyle Hamilton. I mean, it really does appeal to the baseball fan in you a little bit, huh?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it plays, but you still got to fill out your other spots on your roster. And you know, the offensive line, I mean, we're going to see. I as I wrote in my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com after the first few days of free agency, I think talking about replacing three offensive linemen, I think it's one of those things that sounds doable and sounds practical and sounds good in March, and doesn't necessarily match up in how it looks come September. And that's not to say that they're going to fail in doing that. That's not to say that it won't work out ultimately. But my point is, it's probably going to be some growing pains early in the season next year. And that's where you're hoping Derrick Henry's really going to make a major difference there, because it might be choppy. And in fact, I'm not going to say might, it's going to be choppy, because we even saw with this current group this past year, that came together over the course of a couple seasons, you know, that group got better. And you're talking about veteran players even working together, let alone talking about young guys.
Yeah, those
So,
guys were good, really good players. We'll look back at
yeah.
Zeitler. We'll look back at, I mean, for crying out loud, dude, they were 13 and fun. They were
I
unbelievable.
mean,
They were great.
right.
I mean,
It was a good offensive line. Like, I don't get me
and they stayed
wrong.
healthy for the, you know, like for the
Well, I
most
mean,
part.
offensive tackle, I mean, you know, they had to rotate guys down the stretch. I mean, they were doing that for health reasons, and that was unusual, and that's not ideal. And we talked about that. But now they're in a position where, okay, right tackle, yep, who's it going to be? I mean, is it someone on the roster right now? To me, Daniel Faalele has not shown the potential to be a guy that's going to start. I mean, I think he can fill in. He's a backup. But again, big, not really a guy that moves very well. So, not fitting the mold of what I'm talking about here as far as what I think their vision is long term. But they're picking 30th overall. It's a deep draft class. I think they're hoping they can find someone that will step in. Maybe they sign a veteran stopgap for, you know, someone that you say, okay, we're going to draft player X in the first round or the second round. We think he can be our starting right tackle, but maybe not week one. And we'll go out and sign a poor man's Morgan Moses, who's going to start the first five games, or we'll put Patrick McCary there in September with the idea that this guy is going to move in and, you know, in the way that Orlando Brown did his rookie year, you know, as a third round pick. So I think I really am skeptical that the right tackle is on the roster right now. Right guard, we've talked about Ben Cleveland. Left guard, you know, what's Voorhees going to look like? Andrew Voorhees, who they drafted in the seventh round last year out of USC. Remember, he was the kid who tore his ACL at the combine, was a multi-year starter at USC prior to the knee injury, was viewed as a guy that could be a mid-round pick, you know, not a first-rounder, not a second-rounder, but, you know, a guy that early day three, you know,
not an Ojabo guy, right?
What you mean, like not a
project? Like in thoughts of how injured he was and where his ceiling.
Well, that he was going to be a red shirt. He was drafted with the idea that it's a red shirt. I mean, it was an idea that said, you know what, he's going to miss his first season, but we think he can be a potential starter for us. So we'll draft him in the seventh round. You know, we'll draft him in the seventh round, knowing he's not going to play, and then, you know, we'll see what he looks like. Do we have any idea if he's going to be able to play at this level? No. And especially on the heels of coming off of an ACL injury. I mean, we're not talking about a first round pick. We're talking about a guy that, you know, might have been maybe at best a third round pick. Maybe he's a fourth or a fifth round pick, which, by the way, fourth and fifth round picks can develop into starters on the offensive line. We've seen it here many times. But my point is, he's not a sure thing. Big Saleh, who we saw drafted in the sixth round last year, started training camp as their starting left guard. Once the pads came on, it didn't go so well. And that's the nicest way to put it. So I think he's a guy that this is a massive offseason for him, because I think if you ask me right now, what's more likely, he's on the roster bubble or he's really seriously competing to be their starting left guard? It's probably the former, you know, based on the fact that they didn't even think enough of him to want to play him in week 18 against the Steelers, you know, a chance to see what he looked like. And he didn't play in that game even. So, you know, they played John Simpson, the one starter on their O-line that, you know, actually played extensively in that game. So, you know, I think, you know, we're going to see how this plays out. And look, they have some means of cap space to go out and get a veteran stopgap here or there. You know, they're going to see how these young guys look. They're certainly, I mean, at this point, Nestor, if the Ravens aren't drafting two offensive linemen in, say, the first four rounds, if not the first three, you know, and I certainly, you know, at this point, I'd put money on them taking an offensive lineman in the first round. You know, not a sure thing. You never know. The next Kyle Hamilton sitting there at 30th that they had a number 10 overall grade on, then okay, then that changes things. But if the board kind of goes the way you expect it to, I'm guessing they're taking an O-lineman there, whether it's a tackle or a guard, because they need both. So, you know, we're going to have to see how this plays out, but, you know, they do have a couple internal candidates that are at least interesting. And, you know, we're going to see what they think of them. I think at this point, they've got a lot of work to do there. There's no doubt. You know, they would say right now, I think the truth serum, they would say, yeah, we do like Voorhees and we do like Ben Cleveland to handle right guard, but yeah, we got to figure out right tackle. Cause, you know, I'm guessing the internal options they don't really feel overly confident about right now. They like Patrick McCary as their sixth man, right? They like him to be the swing guy, not a starter, at least plan A anyway. So, you know, they've got to figure that out. They've got to figure out other depth spots, you know, the defense, edge, backup. You know, they need a number three corner. They need a number three safety. But, you know, there are lots of teams right now. Most teams, in fact. There isn't anyone who has a complete roster right now, right? I mean, it's March. So from that standpoint, you know, they're not in a position where there's any reason to panic. And they still have a great group of core players. And, you know, they'll take their core players up against anyone not named the Kansas City Chiefs at this point, I suppose. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, the early waves of free agency, I can't say I'm shocked with how it went. I think we all knew that the Ravens were going to lose more players than they would gain over the first week of free agency. I think that's just by the sheer number of free agents and the lack of cap space that they had, that was always going to be the outcome here.
I love how the haters say they had their carcass picked through. It, you know, they haven't had an offseason like this, really, where it's been this sort of ravaged. Not years where, like, Ray and Ed Reed were at the end of a run and there was a championship or whatever. This is a real transition for the offense and, you know, a real commitment to the defense with Roquan and, you know, straight up the middle and the money they're going to have to give Kyle Hamilton and figuring out the back end. And, you know, we're going to have other problems down in Sarasota this week, like too many outfielders and maybe not enough pitching. Luke and I are going to be in Sarasota watching baseball later on in the week. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of moves in the next week, week and a half. Some games on television later on this week. You know, Luke and I waited and thought, well, they're going to put the games on TV. Let's go down there and get on TV. So we'll go down there. I'll have my orange jersey on. You know, it's not going to be as 85 and sunny as I want it to be, but what the hell? It's Florida. We'll have a good time. Luke and I will be doing the owners' meetings, or one of us will be doing the owners' meetings. I'll be doing the bar. And maybe MIC. See you soon. We're going to Florida next week. By the way, I screwed up. I said the Evolution Revolution. I said it was the Banana Splits. I screwed up my early 70s, late 60s psychedelic, trippy, dippy monkeys. Before we go to break, Luke, I have to ask you this. Are you familiar with Lancelot Link Secret Chimp?
No.
Okay, I need you to Google that. Lancelot Link Secret Chimp. Do it when we get off the air, watch a video or two, have a drink or loosen up. Yeah, I'm wearing the blunt shirt. You know, bring a sense of humor. This is late 60s, wavy, great. Like, you're going to see it and you're going to say, I can't believe they made that. But I think it was an answer to the Monkees TV show and a little bit like Planet of the Apes and like all of that era. Lancelot Link Secret Chimp. That's for you young kids out there. So you can see about the Evolution Revolution and know that I wasn't losing my mind when I referenced the Banana Splits. And that was tra-la-la-la-la-la-la. Now you'll be singing that one all day long. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Baseball ahead and football ahead. And Luke and I talking about things. Stay with us. Opening day soon.